Hey, what you're about to listen to is the podcast version of what was a live radio segment on KPFA. Consequently, when you hear us give out a call-in number, you don't want to call it. If you're listening to this as a podcast, it is already too late, and nobody on the other end of that phone number is going to have any useful answers for you. All right, let's go to this week's Corona Calls. We're going to turn, as we do most weeks at this time, to new developments in the world of COVID-19. Our guest is Dr. John Swartzberg, Clinical Professor Emeritus of Infectious Diseases at UC Berkeley School of Public Health. Good morning, Dr. Swartzberg.
Good morning.
I want to start with a big study that came out. We've been getting research on long COVID at slower and slower intervals, it seems like, these days, but this looked like a big one. There had been an open question, in my mind at least, how much second and third and fourth infections increase our risk of getting long COVID. And this rather large study that was just published by The Lancet, entitled Long COVID Associated with SARS-CoV-2 Reinfection Among Children and Adolescents in the Omicron Era, put together a pretty large cohort of young people under the age of 21, and came to the conclusion that the risk roughly doubled with a second infection. That's not to say the second infection is twice as likely to give you COVID. It's that if you're infected two times, you're twice as likely to have contracted long COVID at some point as the first time. In other words, there is no attenuation in the risk as I understand it. Before I start peppering you with questions, am I summarizing that accurately?
Yes. Very accurately, and a very important study. I'm glad you mentioned it today.
All right. So, well, let's start with the basic questions. How solid are the methods that they're drawing conclusions from?
Well, I think they were very solid. They analyzed data from over 400,000 patients across around 40 pediatric hospitals. And so they had a very large database from which to work. And their methods, as I mentioned, were solid. They were good. And they essentially told us exactly what you just mentioned, Brian. What my first or knee-jerk response to the study after looking at it fairly carefully and being satisfied that this is important data was that it's important because a lot of people, I think that if they've had COVID and they didn't get long COVID, they're home free. They're never going to get it again. And a lot of people think that, well, kids don't get long COVID anyway. Both of those statements are wrong. We've known for a long time that kids get long COVID. And we've certainly seen people who've had COVID didn't get long COVID. After a second episode of COVID, they did get long COVID. Or a third episode, they did get long COVID. So it's nice to have this data that confirms what had been really anecdotal observations for a while. And it's another argument for why COVID is not a benign disease.
I had known that there is additional risk after reinfection. I did not expect the amount of the addition to be as large as the risk of the initial infection, because presumably for the second infection, you have a primed immune system. And in this cohort, a lot of the children on their first infection were unvaccinated. What mechanistically would explain the fact that the risk doesn't seem to drop at all?
Well, it's it's unclear. There would be guesses as to why that might be the case, but some of those guesses fly in the face of our ideas of why people get long COVID in the first place. By that, I mean, one of the ideas is that we don't have an adequate immune response. The virus can, in certain areas of the body, like the brain or other organs, can continue to exist, and that may be the cause of long COVID. But that would argue against what this study observes, and that is that these children who got long COVID after a first episode, after a second episode or third episode, their immune system would be very attuned to getting identifying long COVID, the virus. And so the virus should be less likely to persist. So it argues against the persistence of virus hypothesis, but it doesn't completely rule it out, because maybe there's something in some of us where we just don't handle the virus as well, and it leaves the virus present in some organs that could cause disease. Or maybe this hypothesis just doesn't isn't is not an explanation for many of the cases or all of the cases of long COVID. I guess this is sort of a muddled way of my saying that we still don't know why long COVID occurs. So all of these remain hypotheses and certainly not theories.
Does it bolster the autoimmunity hypothesis that one cause of long COVID is the body's immune system turning on the body?
It sure could. The idea would be that a second episode causes the body's immune system to react with more vigor than it should, and that could account for long COVID symptoms. So it would argue potentially for that, yes. What we need to do from this epidemiologic study really is to now continue to look at all of these reasons why people may get long COVID. And of course, as you and I have talked about many times, there are probably several reasons why people get long COVID. It's probably not one, quote, disease.
The study population here is people under the age of 21. Is it possible, or is it, I guess, reasonable to generalize from that to assume a similar increase in risk from reinfection for older people?
I think it's reasonable to generalize. But again, it may be reasonable to generalize, but biology is difficult to understand, and we need studies in older people to see if the same phenomenon occurs. If it doesn't occur, that could perhaps shed some light on the cause of long COVID in younger people.
In terms of the symptoms that they used to code someone as having long COVID, was there a difference in long COVID after a first infection than after a second infection?
I don't remember that in the study, Brian. I can't answer that question.
Nothing that leaped out at you then.
Sorry?
Nothing that leaped out at you then.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand that.
There was no glaring difference in symptomatology that leaped out at you when you read the study.
Oh, no, it didn't strike, it didn't stand out to me. That's right.
Fair enough. I guess the other question I'm left with is how serious is this? The way they're defining long COVID, and they're finding it after one infection out of in a little over 900 out of a million people they studied, and after two infections in a little over 1800 out of a million people they study. Are we talking minor inconvenience? Are we talking permanent disability?
Or everything in between. That the study doesn't really answer that. We don't have long-term data to really answer that. So at this point, I think the study can only tell us that long COVID is something that can occur after the first infection, after the second infection, third infection, and so on. But in terms of how serious this is, a little unclear. Now, the risks of developing severely damaged organs were more likely with the second infection. At least that's what this study showed. I'd like to see confirmatory data to that, but at this point, this large study did suggest that like kidneys, heart problems, severe fatigue, these were all more likely after a second infection with COVID than getting long COVID after a first infection. So that raises the specter that are essentially what you were pointing out, and that is that maybe, and I think maybe has to be underlined here until we have more data, but maybe getting long COVID after a second or third infection of COVID may be more serious in terms of complications.
Oof. as a gloomy note to start the week on, Dr. Swartzberg. I would like to take a few minutes to run through some listener questions, and then we'll have to end a little bit early today for fundraising. To our listeners, we're taking your questions at coronacalls@kpfa.org. We can't open the phone lines during fund drive because we have limited lines coming into the building and we need them to hopefully take donations. So coronacalls@kpfa.org. We've got a question from Darian in Sacramento, who wrote, I recently saw an article about an antihistamine nasal spray that seemed to show some effectiveness in reducing users' susceptibility to COVID. I've read it has had limited clinical trials. Has Dr. Swartzberg heard about it, and does he know anything about it?
Yeah, well, I know a little bit about it because I read the study. It came out probably about a month ago, and it's an antihistamine that's more widely used in Europe than used here, but it is an effective antihistamine. But the study, which was reasonably designed, suggested or actually showed that it seemed to shorten the severity of COVID or could protect against COVID, excuse me. So it's very intriguing. The caveat, of course, as always, is this is one study. It was relatively small. We need a much bigger, robust study. But this study really prompts us to look at other mechanisms of preventing getting COVID. What Darian, I think it was Darian who wrote that question. I think this is certainly worth pursuing with more studies.
So I am only familiar with antihistamines as a treatment for allergies, which is a very different mechanism of disease than airborne respiratory viruses. What do we have any theory establishing what mechanism an antihistamine might be helpful through?
Well, the antihistamines, histamine is a chemical released by cells that are commonly found in the lining of the airways. And so it modifies the cellular response to the release of histamines. Histamines, for example, causes classic symptoms of seasonal allergic rhinitis, or the runny nose and the itching eyes and so on. So perhaps that has something to do with it, but that's only speculative at this point. I want to emphasize that the results of a small study, but they really did show significant significance in terms of reducing the risk of COVID.
So would the theory be that by suppressing the histamine response, you maybe close off some point of entry for the virus in irritated tissue? I'm just racking my head for like why you would even think this would be a helpful drug in the first place.
Yeah, I think it was anecdotal data that prompted the study, as I recall. It was done by very good researchers. So I think the people doing the study was solid and the study itself was solid, just too small. But I don't know, Brian, you know, this is what people in science call post hoc reasoning. And that is we find something and then we try and explain the reasons why, as opposed to understanding the reasons why and then developing something to change those reasons.
So, well, but sometimes that's how you generate useful new hypotheses to test with, you know, actual randomized trial data.
Exactly. So this post hoc reasoning leads us to the question: are there other things we could be doing that don't really target directly the virus? There's no evidence that this would directly target the virus. Are there other things that we can do to modify the risk of the virus getting into our, for example, nasal mucosal cells?
Fascinating. Yeah. Dr. Swartzberg, we're going to have to leave it there for this morning. We will hope to spend a full Monday with you. Next Monday is going to be a holiday, so I guess 2 weeks hence. Thank you so much for spending this Monday morning with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right, that does it for this week's edition of Corona Calls. If you want to send in a question for next week's, you can email coronacalls@kpfa.org. Or tune in live to Call In Live. Usually we air Monday mornings right after 7:30 news headlines on KPFA 94.1 FM in the Bay Area or kpfa.org anywhere in the world. We put a little bit of extra work into repackaging this live segment as a podcast because it feels like the information is useful to a lot of people. And we ought to make it accessible through as many channels as possible. You can help us get the word out by rating and reviewing it in whatever app you're using to listen. And if you want to pitch in some cash, we wouldn't say no. We always take donations at kpfa.org. I appreciate it if you mentioned Corona Calls when you make your pledge. My name is Brian Edwards-Tiegert. I hope you have a great week. Stay well. We'll talk to you next time.